This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Robert Stark here. I'm joined here with Louis Marinelli. He was one of the original founders of the Calexit movement and was going to run for California governor as the Calexit candidate, but now has quit the movement and is actually pretty outspoken against the cause. And I had the background, was involved with the same organization, and I interviewed him on the show about his campaign for governor. And then I was involved with Yes California, and he's quitting the movement and also returning to the United States from Russia, and is not relocating to California for a number of reasons. But Louis, it's great having you on the show, and you put out a pretty bold statement you wrote on your Substack. I brought Calexit into this world, and now I will take it out. So if you want to kind of explain your reasons for leaving the Calexit movement and why you put out that statement. It was such a strong shift basically over the past several months.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thanks again for having me on your show for a second time. It's always good to be able to discuss the issues with you. We have an ongoing conversation in social media, so it's good to be able to put a voice sometimes to the tweets. Yes, I did put out that statement about the fact that I brought Calexit into the world, and now I'll take it out. And I guess I'll answer that question by dividing that statement into two different parts, because they are very different from each other. And so the first part of it, obviously, I brought Calexit into the world. Why do I say that? Well, I say that because in 2014, when I was living in California, I had an idea, a dream, I guess, that California would become an independent country. And so I started a social media campaign about that idea called Sovereign California. And we had a Facebook, we had a Twitter, I built a website. I'm generally pretty good at developing websites and social media campaigns. I had a bumper sticker. I got a California license plate with the letters F-R-E-E space C-A-L for Free California. And so I was all about California independence and secession from the United States. And so that was 2014. So a part of my campaign, obviously it can't be just a campaign of one. So I started to reach out to other people as the campaign on social media grew with more members. I started to look for more like-minded people around the state of California who would be interested in not just pursuing a social media campaign, because of course it's easy and we know how easy it is for people to join social media campaigns and then say they support something, but I actually wanted to do something on the ground, do something for real. And so I looked at, across the state of California, I found different people, and one of the people I came across was Marcus Evans. And Marcus Evans this was 2014.
That's how I was introduced, because I was on AM Talk Radio with Marcus in 1680 AM in Fresno, and I was introduced to the idea of granting California semi-autonomy via Marcus Ruiz Evans.
Yeah, exactly. He was touring around the state at that time promoting his book, California's Next Century. And in that book, he talked about how California is unique and different, and it needed its own public policy preferences, it needed to be somewhat more independent, but not an independent country. He wanted it to be more like a country, but not its own independent country. And that was really the premise of his book, that we wanted, or he wanted to make California, while remaining inside the political system of the United States, its own semi-autonomous region, and something he called subnational sovereignty. And the ideas are really rooted in the idea of devolution of powers, which is more popular in Europe and elsewhere around the world than in the United States. But he believed in devolution of powers, giving the federal government, granting California a unique set of political powers to govern itself as it sees necessary because it's independent, or because it's unique in the United States. It deserves those special powers and that unique relationship with Washington. And that's really the kind of relationship that Marcus Evans at the time was advocating for. So I found that that's pretty close to what I was looking for. Certainly sounds like a stepping stone in that direction. So we got together and we developed a good relationship, good working relationship, good friendship. And we started to promote the idea of, California becoming more like a country while remaining in the United States. And that's why we had Sovereign California. For a time, it developed as a campaign promoting the idea of subnational sovereignty. We had a big banner with a map of California. It was called, the semi-autonomous region of California on it. And so for a while, we were advocating for that cause. Now, I say that I'm the founder of CalExit because CalExit, as we know, was a campaign about California leaving the United States entirely to become its own independent country. Not in some way, shape, or form remaining a part of the American Union with some special relationship like Marcus wanted, but a separate independent country. And so that's what CalExit was. And so between the two of us, the two founders of the movement, one was for California becoming more like a nation, and one was for California becoming an independent country. That was me. Therefore, I consider myself the founder of CalExit. Now, the second part of that statement is, I therefore can bring it out of this world. Now, we know that famous expression that parents always tell their children when they're in trouble, that, I brought you into this world and I'll take you out. So I guess we could take the phrase that I'm using here about CalExit in that light. Of course, it's not literal that we're going to somehow remove CalExit from the history books because it is there and always will be. But the fact of the matter is that I created CalExit with an idea that California would become an independent country. And it was never based upon an idea of advancing or promoting woke politics or far left politics or progressive politics or anything like that. Now, when I left to go live overseas and live and work overseas in 2016, I left the CalExit campaign in the hands of Marcus. And throughout that time, he developed a different strategy. He developed and pursued a different path. And he, had a set of goals that were kind of different from mine when it comes to the direction of the campaign. And so now when I've
And to be fair, planned my I know return, Marcus pretty well. I'd say I wouldn't say he's far left. I'd say he's kind of like moderate to left libertarian who's tolerant, inclusive.
Yeah, I don't mean
approach.
To say that Marcus is
but yeah, he did run it. It was kind of a big tent movement. So you had wide variety. You had libertarians, some Trump supporters, more left-wing people. There wasn't one strong specific ideological litmus test.
Yeah, I agree with you that Marcus is not a leftist that I'm talking about, or one of these woke people that I'm talking about, but he allowed the movement to be largely directed by that type of ideology. And so when you say, for example, in this tent we had people that were libertarians and conservatives and so on and so forth, they were certainly welcome in the tent, and they were always allowed by Marcus to express their views. But if you had to see where Marcus was going to side with, and he was very open about this in his statement on YouTube, where he said that California is a liberal state, and therefore it would make no sense for us to support conservative values as a campaign. I mean, he has that very open, blunt assessment that he goes out in public and says that it makes no sense for CalExit to be in a state like California and advocate for conservative values. So while conservatives and libertarians were, of course, welcome in the campaign, he always sided on, or at least erred in the side of liberal politics. And that became evident when I made a statement on behalf of the campaign, on behalf of Kyle Rittenhouse, who was acquitted, rightfully so, by a jury in Wisconsin. And he got upset that some of the more liberal people in the campaign threw a fit about that because it didn't represent their particular set of values, and he sided with them. Now he's siding with them against all of the conservatives that you and I agree that are in the group.
So he said, that are in the I think I did listen to his video. I think he does have a point. Maybe it would have been bad optics because he said that most of California is very socially liberal and would side against it. So I think Marcus said he didn't call for excluding anyone who supported the Rittenhouse verdict. He just said it was bad optics. I forget the specific details, but was he unhappy? He felt that you represented the Kalexit movement to make it appear pro-Rittenhouse verdict, and he preferred it to be neutral?
I think that it's important to look at my role on a more abstract level, because here I am at that point in time, living overseas. I have just built a house. I have a family here. I have my own job. I have my own life here. Marcus convinces me to come back and run for governor. I can do that. Sure. So what do I do in order to do that? Well, I have to leave my life behind, right? I have to sell my house, which we're in the process of doing even now. I had to sell my personal items. I had to start the process for immigration for my wife. I had to get my child a passport. So we made a lot of big steps towards making that move. So we can come back to California and run for governor, Marcus and I. Well, I as the candidate, Marcus is the campaign manager for that campaign. And I'm not going to do that under in circumstances where I'm going to come back to some group that's going to be advocating for the fact that the judge, for example, in the Rittenhouse case should be arrested and jailed. I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to come back to that, where I'm going to be surrounded by people who have that mindset where the judge is so bad that he should be arrested and jailed because the jury found Kyle Rittenhouse innocent, as they should have. And so that's just the kind of mentality that I think that Marcus allowed to infiltrate, and I say infest, our campaign. And he often and too often deferred to that mentality. And I saw that that's what I was going to go into going forward, that I was going to be coming back to California and be constantly be facing against that type of mentality. And I wasn't going to do that. And I had already given up a lot of things to initiate the process of me coming back to California. And I felt that if I was going to come back to California and run for governor, that I was the candidate, that the campaign should reflect those values, the values of the candidate. I wasn't coming back to California to be some puppet head and be a parrot for some liberal, woke, progressive politics campaign. No, if I was going to be the candidate, as Marcus convinced me to be, then I was going to come back to be a candidate and support and speak up for the values that I supported as an individual, and therefore when I returned to California as a candidate.
Yeah, definitely Kalexit has shifted to the left. And to kind of explain your background, you're not a right-winger, you'd say, pretty similar to my views, like set where you are, it's centrist populism or radical centrism, so maybe a mix of Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and libertarianism with the principles of free speech, anti-woke, self-determination, and decentralization, regardless if California, Kalexit and California are going to reflect those values. That's basically where you are in the kind of like dissident center, not the far right or far left.
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm far right or far left. I mean, I would say that I'm closer to the right than the left. I do have some things that I believe that liberals, so to speak, believe in. I believe, for example, that everyone should have health coverage or something to that effect. I don't necessarily agree with the manner by which many liberals think that should happen, but I do believe in the principle that everyone, for example, should have health care. And that's something that liberals might say more common than conservatives would. I believe in protecting the environment. I studied environmental science. I believe in environmental issues and taking care of our planet. Those are things that you would more likely hear from a liberal point of view. But I am a populist more than I am a Republican or a Democrat. I'm a populist more than a conservative or a liberal. And my politics, because I'm more socially conservative when it comes to things like abortion, for example, which I'm pro-life, I'm against abortion, I side more with the conservative point of view.
And would you say that this shift to the left, did this occur after the election of Donald Trump? And was this also when, at the same time, the Kalexit movement did grow? It did expand a lot more, but it does seem like there was a decline when Trump lost to Biden, And there very well could be, there could be a revival in the movement. Because it very looks like the Biden's been such a disaster. It looks like the GOP will take power in the midterms, but that will mean more people will join. But more people motivated by opposition to Trump or supportive of the left and woke politics. And you know what, so is that your observation that this shift happened after the election of Donald Trump?
Yeah, and frankly speaking, those are the kind of people that we didn't want in our campaign. We don't want people to join the campaign because of the result of a particular election. And that's the problem, is that Donald Trump won, and then there was this knee-jerk reaction of people who wanted to stomp their feet and say they wanted to secede from the union because of that. Yet these people, we can't rely on those people to support secession 4 years down the line when someone else gets elected. They're all of a sudden going to, you know, oh, actually, we don't need to secede now because Joe Biden's president or Hillary Clinton's president or somebody I like is president. Those are not reliable supporters of an independence campaign. Those aren't people who are motivated by the right of self-determination. Those are people who are motivated by political ideology. And as we know in the country, the United States, the political winds shift left and right every 4 or 8 years. And so we saw Donald Trump elected in 2016, a massive explosive growth in support for CalExit, which died off shortly thereafter when you had people like Rachel Maddow going on there talking about Russia collusion nonsense. And now you have Joe Biden being elected president, I guess, so to speak, being elected president. And people are all of a sudden placated by that. Well, what's going to happen, like you're saying, in the next couple of years when the Republicans take back control of the House and the Senate, and in 2024 they take back the White House, which is a very plausible idea, they're going to be back in the CalEx campaign. Well, frankly speaking, no campaign, in my opinion, should be welcoming of people who are going to come and go based on what the political winds are. That's not a stable campaign platform, and I don't support it.
Oh, yeah, so like I put forth a platform as sort of a template, a California Nationalist Unity platform, which does incorporate, has strong principles, but it's a crossover appeal. But part of my, like, one of my motivations for supporting the CalExit movement was I wanted to see an alternative political paradigm to the Democrats in California. And, yeah, I mean, the CalExit movement is going to have a coherent decision whether they want to defend California exceptionalism based upon the narrative of the Democratic Party and Newsom and woke culture, or propose something radically different. But I'd support CalExit on principle under the right political framework. But I'd say, like, if a referendum were to be held like next month, I'd actually vote no, just because I think like the worst elements of the Democratic Party would seize power. And then you also made points about losing protections of the U.S. Constitution, like including free speech and the abolition of private property. So I'd support the principle under the condition there was a right framework, but I think under the condition now, I think an independent California would be a disaster because the worst elements of the Democratic Party would seize power, and sort of a hybrid of like the worst of leftism with the sort of like corporate Silicon Valley oligarchy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's kind of what Marcus and I had in mind back in 2014 and 15 when we started a political party called the California National Party. Now today, like you said, it's been taken over by these far leftists and these, you know, these loony lefties, and they have a different platform. But the platform back when in 2014 and 15 when Marcus and I created the California National Party, it was a pure thing that we were creating. It was something that was what was in California's interest, or supported ideas that were in California's interest, not something that was a left-wing thing or a right-wing thing, but it took ideas, the best of the ideas from the left and from the right, put it together for a pure political platform that wasn't ideological. And that's why I've always said, for example, that the party that that supports California independence in California should be an apolitical party. It shouldn't really be political. It should be an apolitical party. It shouldn't be based on ideology. It should be based on a platform of self-determination. And if you support that basic idea, then you're in. And of course, because California has a set of particular policy preferences and needs, it should take some position on those core values and those core issues, but not as it is today. And that's why, for example, the California National Party 5 or 6 years down the line is still not qualified as an official political party in California. And even its numbers are shrinking every year. So, and I think that that failure to qualify and the fact that they're shrinking every year is demonstrative of the fact of that their leftist politics that have taken over there have push people away from it, because nobody really wants to be a part of that except for the fringe left.
Yeah, I was interested in joining the California National Party briefly, and my initial impression was that it was a kind of centrist to center left populism, like the kind of maybe elements of like Andrew Yang or Tulsi Gabbard. Like somewhat progressive, but not far left. And then I know Michael Loebs ran for governor recently, but I think you crafted the original platform. I think they may have even changed their platform, but now like my impression of the California National Party is they're much more very far left and much more woke. A lot of their platform comes across more as like CRT type ideology. And a lot of this, yeah, and also like the, I don't know if they're affiliated with the Red Star Report, but that's just really totally extreme left. But that's my impression of what happened to the party. Can you explain more about the background, about how you founded the California Nationalist Party, the initial platform, and then some of the changes up until Michael Loebs ran for governor?
Well, yeah. I mean, when we were running Sovereign California, we realized that, you know, we could approach this issue of California independence from several different angles. And Sovereign California was a political action committee. It was going to be supporting ballot initiatives, things of that nature. But we could also approach from the angle of electing people to office who supported the idea. And to do that, you need a political party. So we decided to organize a political party, and I submitted the original paperwork. I wrote most of the original platform because at the time when it was,
and they did, this was before the platform Trump was changed over the years.
Yeah, of course, and a political platform has changed from year to year anyway. So I'm not trying to say that 5 years down the line they should have the same platform that I wrote 5 years ago. I'm just saying that when we started it and when I was a member of it. I wrote that original platform, and I designed the logo and created the website and bought the URL, californianational.party, with that extension on the end there, .party instead of .com. And, you know, all of the groundwork for the California National Party was done by Marcus and I. And I did most of the writing because at the time, and then frankly, up until now, when it comes to things on social media or writing things, booklets, pamphlets, platforms, website, the things, typically, I did that on my computer with my Adobe products, and so I worked on that platform and worked on it with some of the other members at the time, and that was the California National Party. We started to collect signatures for its qualification, and we had voter registration drives that we did at the same time that we were collecting signatures for Sovereign California's ballot initiative, and so we were growing at the time. And going pretty well, I think. And then we reached a point where, of course, you know, Lewis can't be everybody, right? Lewis can't be the president of Yes California, or at the time Sovereign California, and the chairman of the California National Party, and the candidate for assembly in District 80. So we decided, okay, we need to start dividing things up a little bit here and delegating powers to different people, because it's a movement, not just Lewis. That's always ironic, because everybody up until now tries to complain about Lewis, thinks it's only about Lewis all the time. Well, I was the one who said, well, we need to break this up, because it can't be just me. Why am I the only one? Why am I running for Assembly District 80? Why am I the chairman of the California National Party? Why am
so
I the president?
So when you ran for state assembly in the San Diego area, was that with the California National Party?
That was. I was the California National Party candidate for state assembly. You can go on YouTube and find the commercial that has the logo and everything. It's a pretty cool commercial we made.
And it was the highest vote count of any Calexit candidate in history.
Well, I don't know if there's been any other Calexit candidates on the ballot, but I mean, and I still only got like 6% of the vote. But
I think that is because Michael Loebs, he was the only other major one, and I think he got his highest vote count maybe 2% in San Francisco, but that would have been ahead of that, of his count.
You know, the problem was, though, there were 40-something candidates there, 42, 43 candidates there. Michael Loebs, I mean, running as a candidate for secession, had something there that kind of made him unique and stand out from the other candidates, yet he didn't use that. I don't know why you would be the chairman of the California National Party and run for governor and not run on the idea of making California an independent country. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but even with Michael Loebs, I noticed a shift with him because when I first discovered him, he was talking more about things like decentralization. And I spoke with him on the phone a couple years ago, and he had good ideas. But then during his campaign for governor, he went full woke.
Yeah, I think that if you're in a field of 40-something candidates, you need to find a way to stand out. And you're not going to do it by blending in with the rest of the liberals on the ballot by talking about woke politics and progressive politics. You are the chairman of the California National Party. Your party has one thing that's unique from basically any other party in the state, and that's the fact that it supports, at least at some point in time, either now or later, California independence. He should have gone out there and used that idea to bring attention to himself. Then he could have talked about woke politics all the time, but at least he had to bring attention to himself. And if people in California knew that there was a candidate on the ballot who's supporting independence, it really wouldn't matter what his opinions were on any other issues, because people would be like, oh, that's cool, that's different, that's unique, I'll vote for that guy because whatever. And so he didn't do that. And that's why he got, as you said, 2% of the vote. It's like basically every other candidate got 2% of the vote. He didn't stand out because he didn't highlight what makes him stand out. And that is the fact that he's the chairman of a political party that supports California independence.
While you were involved with Calexit, did you get flack? Did you get flack for taking more conservative or more pro-Trump stances previously in Calexit? And also, some people in Calexit have outright accused you of sabotaging the movement. But to be clear, you were a firm believer in the cause initially. But did you get ever get flack for taking these more non-left stances, being more pro-Trump, or also your background in the campaign in Proposition 8 to define marriage between a man and a woman, those different components?
I would say that I didn't receive a lot of flack for my more conservative values, and I would point to an example. When I was the chairman of the California National Party, this was back like in 2014, maybe early 2015, the Trump campaign was just launching, and we endorsed Donald Trump for president. Now, everybody knew that it was kind of done tongue-in-cheek, but you know, we went out there and we publicly endorsed Donald Trump for president as the California National Party. And I was the one who promoted that idea. I said, let's do that. You know, I did it because I wanted to support Donald Trump. But I sold it to the rest of the group. I said, hey, we can explain why this is good for California. Why is it good for California? Because it's good for California independence. Because if Donald Trump actually does go ahead and win, you know how many people are going to support CalExit at that? Or at that time, we didn't have CalExit because it wasn't a hashtag. But you know how many people are going to support California independence? Because they're going to be rushing to California independence campaign because Donald Trump gets elected. We got to go out there and support this guy. Now, deep down inside, I'm supporting the guy for real. I like guy. So I'm trying to find ways to say, hey, let's take this campaign and make it a campaign that I believe in and stands up for things that I believe in personally, and then I can take those things and I can sell them to the other members and say, hey, this is good for you too, because we can do it kind of tongue-in-cheek, and people will know that it's sarcastic, and it will also be a good marketing tool for us to say, hey, if Donald Trump does win, then we're going to have a massive growth of support for the campaign.
And you wrote about this in your Substack articles, but the thing is, like, you were promoting California exceptionalism, and again, like, the need should have been to create an alternative framework, and for people who would want to do something positive for California in the future, that would have to be the need to create a new framework. But I think there's a problem of defending the narrative of the Democratic Party, because just the reality, California has some of the worst inequality. You go to major cities like LA and SF, there are these massive homeless encampments. There's the Exodus. It's a major center for woke culture and tech censorship. And just the left as a whole is becoming extremely authoritarian with a cultural revolution. The Democratic Party is extremely corrupt and has a stranglehold on power. It's high taxes, but with low quality services. Like, how would you define California values beyond just blue state values? So there's all these questions. And you were saying, like, you were even in Istanbul Which you were even saying, like the quality of life there was much is and the infrastructure is much higher than in urban California. I mean, California had so much potential. In many ways, it is one of the most beautiful places in the world, as far as a natural beauty. But there's a need to be honest, instead of shilling for California values and just looking at these major problems and just how terrible the political leadership is, and
Yeah.
Calexit
I
was
totally
often
agree.
kind of a mistake of sh kind of
I agree
shilling
with
for
you.
the Democratic narrative.
Yeah, California, I agree, is a beautiful place to visit. I've been to many places in California as a visitor. I'm sure I'll go back to California someday. So I'm not like one of those people who are going to say, oh, I won't touch California with a 40-stick pole or whatever they say. I'll go back to California. I'll visit California. I like hiking. I like to visit the national parks there. So there's a lot of good things about California. I don't like California's politics. I don't like California's government. And then by extension, the people who vote for that government time and time again, I don't like them either because they're the ones causing a problem. And so that's the problem is really, you can't just say the California government's
Yeah,
a
'cause that's
problem.
the
Well,
thing
Trump's
with
every time are
these.
the problem too.
Yeah, exactly. 'Cause with these other independent movements, they talked about like we yeah, there's like the Scottish independence, Catalan independence in Spain, Cape independence in South Africa. Like they have this shared cohesive identity that their region is kind of united against the other nation that doesn't respect them. But then, how do you
Yeah.
say you're a California nationalist? But then you're opposed to like to the large number that is loyal to the Democratic Party. It becomes a bit convoluted.
That's the thing with California, though, is that California is a population of California isn't unique from the rest of the American population. It's basically American settlers came to California illegally, by the way. They came to California, and the offspring continue to live there today. So those are Americans.
Because the number of people descended from like the original Californios, that population's so minuscule, so either they're people here are either settlers descended from settlers from America, they're basically Americans, or they're very recent immigrants, but there's not a cohesive identity comparable to, say, Scotland, Catalan, or the Cape region. That's
Yeah,
different.
exactly. That's one of the major differences there. And that's why we were always trying to develop in some way an idea of a civic nationalism for California. And I always joke with Marcus, I don't know if you've seen the movie Braveheart,
Oh
but
yeah.
I always wanted to talk about how the problem with California is that it's full of Americans. Whereas the king in the movie Braveheart was saying that the problem with Scotland is it's full of Scots. And I was joking with Marcus that the problem with California is that it's full of Americans. And that's kind of the picture I think that's important because you can't have a civic pride in California that's anti-American when the people there are Americans and they're descendants of Americans. And so the Californios, the original population there, like you said, is very small, was very small, was decimated even further by the arrival of the American settlers. And so the people who are descendants today of the original California population are such a small population that they don't make up what is known as California today. And so that's like from the movie Braveheart, the problem with Scotland is it's full of Scots. Well, this is the same thing, but it's much further down the line where they already had time to breed the Scots out. Here the Americans have already bred the Californias out by coming to California en masse and taking over the population. And since then, we've had immigration to the state from other countries, like in Asia and South America and Central America and Mexico. And so it's just a whole big smorgasbord of people. And there is no one California nation in California. There is no one particular California population or nation, like Marcus likes to talk about. It is a melting pot in a melting pot. And with that, it's difficult to create a single unified civic pride that we were trying to develop, which is where the idea you got into talking about California exceptionalism, that's where that idea comes out of because Marcus and I were, Marcus kind of sold me on this. I was talking about before, I was trying to sell people on supporting Trump in one way or the other. Well, Marcus always sold me on the idea, and I believed him, and it's true to some extent, that California, regardless of the fact that there are so many different people there from different backgrounds, is a unique and distinct society in North America. It's kind of like Quebec in Canada. And it is a distinct society because it does have a population that is physically separated from the rest of the American population. If you look at where the population density of the United States is, the California population you can pick it out. Whereas if you were to look at, for example, Tennessee, you wouldn't really say, oh, that's Tennessee or that's Ohio. Those populations are so intermixed with each other that you can't really see it on a population distribution map. But California, separated by the Rockies, separated by the deserts, separated by the ocean on the western side, is its own physical population. And so from that context, we said, okay, this is the California nation, and it is a melting pot, and it isn't one nation that goes back thousands of years like the Catalans did, for example. But we can go take that and say, hey, it does have its own distinct identity, and it is better, so to speak, in some ways because of X, Y, and Z.
For sure. And then also the Exodus, it just serves as like a safety valve, because safety valve for discontent, because anyone who has an issue, they'll just leave rather than fighting for any kind of a change. And especially like the moderates, conservatives, and populists are leaving. So we either get like those who are leftists and or those who serve like or those who serve like the oligarchic like neoliberal interest. And it kind of makes me think of like when collected activist Sean Carr Singham, his appearance on Tucker Carlson, he said that the Exodus was good because it would create more opportunities for new immigrants to come in. And I think he was, like, when I interviewed him, he admitted he was kind of trolling. But I do think that with a lot of the leftists, some of the leftists who supported Collexit, they're thinking if they're in opposition to America, then maybe hypothetically we could import new immigrants to build this new California identity. But I don't think that would work. I think that scenario, I'm not opposed to immigrants per se. I'm just opposed to that model of a zero sum like displacement. But I think that wouldn't build a California identity. That would just make things inequality worse and just benefit like the tech oligarchy.
Well, yeah, let me just point out, I mean, Sanger Singham, at that point in time, was in over his head, and he knew it, and he knew it going into that show, which is why he got into the show and he was high as a kite, because he was, stage fright. And so he goes out there and says stupid things, and now he tries to kind of explain, oh, I was just trolling. That's just an excuse. It's not the reality. The reality of the matter is he said what he believed, and he said some pretty stupid things.
No, I think he does, because he told me, when I interviewed him, he told me he was trolling. But if you listen to his podcast, The Red Star Report, I think he actually does genuinely believe in that ideology, that because Americans here are maybe backwards or reactionary, we can build this new California identity by importing new immigrants. But the thing is, like, you can't really build an identity like that from scratch. That's just going to benefit the oligarchy. That's not going to build anything. That's not going to accomplish the goal.
He wasn't trolling. It would be kind of like me going out there now, tomorrow, writing a post saying, hey, for the last month, I've just been trolling. I'm actually, a big leftist. that's what he did. He realized he got some flack when he got off the air there and said some pretty stupid things. People didn't like what he said. Now he's trying to, or at least he was at least at the time, trying to explain it away. I'm just trolling. It was Tucker Carlson. I went on to Fox News, and I was controlling. So the joke's on them, when really the joke was on him, because he made himself look like an idiot.
Oh, yeah. And, with this talk of national divorce, you're supportive of decentralized ideas, just not Collexit. So it could be a division, a partition by county line, red or blue, or and blue counties. But that also might mean, like, you might support the Jefferson movement as an alternative to Collexit. So polarization is just getting worse and worse. And people talk about us being, like, in a cold civil war and this great bifurcation between the red and the blue states. So you might support something, or you do support alternatives. So maybe, or it could just be the United States remains, but states push for like a radical decentralized model, you do have proposals that you would support.
Oh, of course. I mean, and when I said that I started off my post on Substack saying that California shouldn't become an independent country as we know California is today, because there are millions of Californians, Americans in California who are not the leftist woke lunatics that I'm referring to in that post. And they shouldn't be dragged out of the United States if they don't want to be. And so it kind of goes along the idea of that whole line where people say, you know, this is going to change the world as we know it. Well, what I'm talking about here is that I don't support CalExit as we knew it, whereas it was the state of California with its current state boundaries, the borders that go along Oregon and Nevada and Arizona, secedes from the United States as one political entity. I would support if the far left liberals in the far west parts of the states got together and they wanted to separate from the United States, create a Western Republic, maybe with parts of Oregon and Washington as well, go along with it if you want to, create a Western Republic, as was the original idea of the Founding Fathers. They wanted that Western Republic on the West Coast. I would fully support that. I just don't think that they should be dragging Jefferson along with them or dragging the people of the Sierras with them and so on and so forth, because those people do not share that political ideology. And I would hate to see that those Americans were dragged out of the country that they love and are patriotic for. They should be able to remain in the United States. And so therefore, if the coastal elites in San Francisco Bay Area and LA and so on and so forth, they want to succeed and create a country along with Washington and Oregon coastal areas, that'd be great. I think that they should do that. I support the right of self-determination. So in no way, shape, or form does my attack on CalExit mean I don't support all of a sudden the right of even the far leftists that I don't like to leave the United States. In fact, I encourage that. I think it's a cancer. I think that their ideology is a cancer and that we should amputate that cancer from the United States. And so that not only that they advocate for their own independence, but I think that the rest of the country should be advocating to cut them off and let them go their own way so that they don't infect the rest of the country or continue to affect, let's say, the rest of the country with their lunatic liberal politics. And so we should amputate the left wing of the United States and allow them to go off in their own direction. That would be the westernmost parts of the state, because that's clearly where the liberals live, on the western part of the state, and allow the people in Northern California and Eastern California to remain part of the United States, maybe join Nevada, maybe join the remaining parts of Oregon and maybe the greater Idaho movement, which is going on there, and they can remain a part of the United States. And so that would be the West Coast. I believe that other parts of the country should formulate their own unions as well. I believe that the Northeast, Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, parts of New York near the Hudson River, which are blue, and Lake Champlain, which are blue, New York City, New Jersey, those areas should all join together in a blue New England kind of region. And there are other parts of the country that I think that also should join together to make more politically homogenous regions. That's what my big thing is. I think that the regions, to the extent possible, should be politically homogenous. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to be able to completely wipe out, all the blue voters in one area and all the red voters in another area, or force them to move out or whatever. But you can, to the extent possible, you can make it where this region, for example, in the Northeast United States would be Maine, New Hampshire, the eastern part of New York, New York City, New Jersey, northern part of New Jersey, Philadelphia. Those areas are pretty urban blue areas. They would have a politically homogenous government. And I think that that government would function for those people in that region of the country. Just like a Western Republic between Seattle and Los Angeles along the West Coast would have a pretty politically homogenous government, because they would share the same values of environmentalism and left liberal politics and woke politics, CRT, and so on and so forth. Let them have it. That's what they want. That's what they want to do. They should be able to do that. But they shouldn't be able to force the rest of the country to live under those platforms and live with those principles. And that allows the rest of the country, the big swath of red country or counties and the rest of the country, to live independent of that lunatic politic, those lunatic politics. And we would be able to have a better country for ourselves in the middle, where the red counties and the red states could live with a government that's politically homogenous under the conservative values that they have today.
And Lewis, before I wrap up the show, do you have any future political plans or any upcoming projects that you want to plug? Or you also want to plug your Substack?
Well, I would add one thing. I know you mentioned before about splitting things up along county lines. I don't necessarily think that the county lines is the way to go. I think that it's one part of the equation. I think that we should look at the counties Let's see which ways they typically vote. Congressional districts overlaid on top of that. Census data laid on top of that. And then if we overlay upon each other, superimpose on each other, the voting histories of counties, the voting districts of congressional districts, the census data, we put it all together, we can get a good picture of where the blue areas of the country are and where the red countries, red areas of the country are, and then make the lines in some way that makes sense for that. And so I know that there's been people on the internet who have said Lewis wants to divide the country up based on counties or make all the counties independent countries because they don't actually read the text, they read the headlines. And that's not what I want. I want to take the county data. I want to take the congressional district data. I want to take the census data, overlay them on top of each other, and we can get a good picture of where is blue America, where is red America, and then make some lines there to make sense for a national divorce. And as it goes to the last question you were talking about future politics, I mean, I don't really have any plans right now. I do intend on moving to a red county in a red state, which will represent my values, so I don't have to always be constantly battling the political decisions of the government under which I live. It's the worst thing for me is to be having to go somewhere where I turn on the news or read the newspaper and I'm upset with what the government's doing. I don't want to have to care about the government. I don't think the government should be a part of my daily life. So I'm going to go somewhere where I'm going to feel confident the government's going to do their thing, and it's not going to bother me on a day-to-day basis, and I can just live my life. That's why I'm going to go live in a red county, in a red state, where I think that my values will be represented, and I don't have to worry about that. Now, from time to time, of course, I'm sure there'll be something that comes up, and I can go out and protest that. But I don't want to have to go out and protest everything every day. And if I went back to California, I would feel that I have to go out and protest everything every day. And that's not a life to live. I don't want my life to be enshrouded by politics like that. I actually hate politics. And I do it because I feel passionate about things that I believe. And if I could go somewhere, which is why I went to Russia, for example, I get away from the politics. If I can go somewhere and live somewhere where I don't have to think about politics on a day-to-day basis, I can just live my life and do my thing and be happy, then I'm content. And that's what my goal is, and that's why I intend to move to a red county and a red state.
Lewis Marinelli, thanks for being on. Great show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a good talk. I'm sure we'll do it again sometime.